Welcome to the Global Research News Hour. I'm Steve Lenman. Just a little orientation before beginning the program. Today is the first day we're in our new time slot, an hour earlier, and instead of a two-hour program once a week on Mondays, we're a daily program now. We will air live Mondays and Tuesdays. Occasionally, we may go live later in the week as well, but for the time being at least, we will play archived programs Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday in this time slot, 10 a.m. Central Time. In most cases, we will repeat the current programs, the Monday and Tuesday programs. They're the newest. They're the most up-to-date. So we will replay those. If for any reason we think another is especially important, given events, then we would go with that program. But again, live Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday through Friday, we will play archive programs. My guest today is Jeff Gates. Jeff is an educator. He's an attorney, a merchant banker, and he's been a financial policy advisor in over 34 countries. In the 1980s, he served as counsel to the Senate Committee on Finance. He writes now for trade, professional, and popular publications, and he's written three books, The Ownership Solution, Democracy at Risk, and his newest book and topic for today's program is called Guilt by Association, subtitled How Deception and Self-Deceit Took America to War. We have focused on recent programs very heavily on the new Obama administration and, of course, the global economic crisis that's extremely severe. Those are key topics. We're long overdue having a discussion of America's foreign wars. And there are two of them. There are two of them we're actively involved in, and sadly, there are others that we are engaged in with proxies, with occasional forays like we do in Pakistan. But the two ones with many thousands of U.S. troops on the ground are Iraq, mainly, and Afghanistan. Well, Jeff wrote about the Iraq War, mainly, and he ties it together, going back with links to organized crime, showing a connection between organized crime, going back to the 1920s, maybe earlier than that. But, Jeff, am I connected with you?
Yes, good morning, Steve. How are you?
Oh, good morning, Jeff. You wrote an important book. It's been highly praised. People need to know about it, and they need to know about your thinking about the wars and what's going on and the deceit and lies that brought us into it. I think listeners to this program are well aware that we got into it by deception. But you wrote the book on it, so we want to discuss it. We have four breaks, Jeff. When you hear the music strike up, it means a break is coming, and I'll interrupt. And one is coming in about a minute. But kick it off, and then we'll come right back after the first break.
Yes, Steve, the Guilt by Association is a thematic approach to understand how we displace facts, what we can be led to believe is true. And the belief in this case was belief in Iraqi WMD, belief that there were mobile biological laboratories, belief that there were meetings in Prague, belief that there were yellow cake, uranium, all these sorts of things, all of which were totally false, all of which we were led to believe. And so the notion is, how do you displace facts with what people can be led or deceived to believe is true, and who would have the motivation to do that?
Well, Jeff, we have programs like this to do that, and authors like you to do it, too. Let's take a break, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. I'm on with Jeff Gates. We're talking about his new book, Guilt by Association, How Deception, Self-Deceit Took Us to War. Jeff, just a quick comment. I know my listeners are well aware of this. The foreign wars that we're engaged in, that this country is engaged in, are illegal wars. They're acts of aggression. They're the same crimes that the Nazis committed and were brought to justice by the Nuremberg Standard, and the most guilty Nazis were hanged. If there were any justice today, the guilty ones, the most guilty ones for sure, the Bushes, the Cheneys, the Rumsfelds, the people like that, the key leaders in Congress that went along with this, they'd be before a Nuremberg tribunal, which today is the ICC, the International Criminal Court in The Hague. and they would be brought to justice. Unfortunately, we live under Vix's justice, so these people will be free. Apparently, they'll be free. Maybe who can tell what will happen one day? But very sadly, these criminals so far have gotten away from with their crimes. But please go on, Jeff. I didn't mean to interrupt your train.
Yeah, I don't agree with that train of thought. I think this is a war of deceit. When you're in a position of decision making, you're no better than the intelligence that you're given on which to make those decisions. I don't think this is a war being waged by the United States. This is a war being where we're the agent of those who deceived us to go to war. That's a very different notion altogether.
Who do you call the agents?
Of this book is that how are we serially deceived to wage these wars, and whose purposes is served by it, and to what degree do we deceive ourselves to go to war as well by saying, well, that, there are certain governments with which we're allied, who we treat as an ally, yet if you look behind the screen, you find that consistently it is this government that has deceived us. And in this case, we're waging a war not for the United States' purposes, as best I can tell, but for appears to be the goal of what we call Greater Israel. And that is the theme of the book, that this was a war of deception, but we had to also agree to deceive ourselves in order to be deceived to go to this war.
Jeff, I think of the U.S. and Israel as being partners along with the U.K., that's my axis of evil. Very definitely. But the Brits know better. They were kicked out of Afghanistan in the 19th century. They were kicked out of Iraq in the 20th century. They know that these people don't tolerate occupiers, and yet they got themselves back into both wars. We very definitely are partnered with both countries. I see them as junior partners. But I definitely feel that our government willfully lied, willfully committed acts of aggression. They knew what they were doing. I can't speak for George Bush, but certainly those in power with the most intellect, with the most knowledge, they knew exactly what we were doing. And anybody who knows U.S. history, Jeff, knows that this wasn't a unique time. Every single war that the U.S. fought in the 20th century, at least, was based on deception and deceit and outright lies, going back to World War One. Woodrow Wilson took us into World War One based on deceit. And World War Two as well, the so-called good war, that there was nothing good about, Franklin Roosevelt took us into that war based on deceit and deliberately maneuvered the Japanese into attacking us.
Well, I don't argue with those who hold that view. I just hold a different view. And in this particular case, the analysis and the introduction really starts out with this notion is distinguishing those people, what we call agents, and to suggest that that George Bush is somehow a traitor to this country and took us to war purposely is a bit of a stretch for me. I would say he is what we call an asset. An asset is someone who's highly dysfunctional, who's been profiled to have those dysfunctions, and then is nurtured in such a fashion to have a political career like he has had, to have him in a particular time, place, and circumstance when events came to pass where you would know within an acceptable range of probabilities he would make decisions consistent with the goals that those who are expert at deception have set.
And what, so what do you think of Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, Colin Powell?
Well, assets can be people who are profiled to have an extraordinary dysfunction. The dysfunction typically are need for recognition, a need for power, sex, drugs, whatever the need is. And you routinely see that these needs are fed by those profiled and guilt by association. So that you can, I liken it to a mathematical model. This is what we call game theory. You never know precisely what a Dick Cheney or a Donald Rumsfeld will do. But you do know within an acceptable range of probabilities that they're sufficiently self-absorbed that they will do something consistent with the agenda you have in mind. Do I think that Donald Rumsfeld or Dick Cheney are traitors to the United States? No, I do not. Do I think they're self-absorbed and easily profiled and likely to make decisions consistent with that profile? Absolutely. That does not make them traitors, and that does not make the United States a gangster state. What it means is we've been consistently manipulated over a period of years, and most egregiously and most obviously by this latest war in which we now find ourselves. And the people who took us into Iraq are now very much trying to take us into Iran, and it is the same crowd, it is the same modus operandi. So that's where I very much disagree with the analysis that I don't disagree with. I'd have a very different analysis how these things come about.
Well, I see the U.S., Jeff, as having been an imperial state going back to George Washington, although I think most historians I'm familiar with think of the so-called Spanish-American War as the real coming out of U.S. imperialism back at the end of the 19th century. We very definitely are an imperialist country. We seek imperial gain. At one time, our aims were much less than they are today. Since World War II, we expanded our aims to become a global imperialist, and the Middle East is any area with great resources, especially oil, becomes prime territory. So the prime territory, at least since World War II, has been even more than the Middle East. Call it Eurasia. And Zbigniew Brzezinski defines what he calls Eurasia, extending all the way from Russia and China to the Indian subcontinent, including the Middle East. I mean, this vast territory that has by far the majority of the world's natural resources, vitally needed resources. It's oil and most of the rest as well. Of course, that's including North Africa.
I understand that perspective. Let me offer a slight different take on that, which is the nation was founded to escape those who would have us governed based on belief versus based on facts. And what we now know in the most current war is an obvious case in point. The facts that were cited for why we would go to war in Iraq turned out to be false. They were simply beliefs. They were deceptions. They were lies. But there's no clear indication that these deceptions and whatnot trace themselves to disloyal Americans in the sense of the people who are currently that we elected to office. I do think that you find in the offices of those who are elected to office people who have an agenda that is not consistent with the form of governance that we thought we had, which is based on facts and evidence, sort of a post-Enlightenment notion of how you want to govern yourself. So the imperialists would be those who think that they have a right to act above the law, that they have a right to deceive the lawmakers in order to have us pursue an agenda with our military that is not consistent with our national interest. And I'd say that's a pretty good description of what we're now doing in Iraq, and what the same network of deceit is doing to try to now take us into Iran. And I don't agree with those who would try to make us out of, again, as a sort of gangster state and this imperialist hegemon worldwide. I don't see that. I don't think that's not the America I know. I do think we've routinely been deceived into taking that and pursuing those causes, those courses of action. But guilt by association is meant to enable people to see who it was that deceived us to do that.
We differ a little bit, I guess, based on the history that I know, Jeff. I know I like to look back at past presidents, and if I had to pick one that I would rank pretty much up at the top, I don't know who would be the one I would rank first. None of them were perfect. They all had great flaws, including the ones that we most greatly admire, Washington, Lincoln, FDR. Some put Woodrow Wilson in that. But they all had imperial aims the way I view them. Washington wanted to slaughter the native people. I've quoted his very words. I mean, they are so blood-curdling, it's hard to believe that a man of that stature would say the things that he said. And I've quoted him verbatim. I mean, he was a bloody racist. And all you have to do is read what he actually said, and there's no other conclusion. Franklin Roosevelt absolutely wanted to get us into World War II and deceive and pressure the Japanese to attack us. They never wanted to attack us. And it's documented that we tracked the Japanese fleet right across the Pacific Ocean to Pearl Harbor. We never warned the commander at Pearl Harbor. We got the carriers out so they wouldn't be destroyed. But we wanted the casualties. Just like I tend to believe we wanted the 9/11 casualties to create an open sesame to allow us to go to war with Afghanistan and with Iraq. And I do believe that criminal people committed these things, and they did it willfully, just the way Woodrow Wilson did it, and Franklin Roosevelt did it, and Harry Truman did it in Korea, and Lyndon Johnson did it in Vietnam, and on and on and on and on. And as you say, there's a grave risk that we might end up going to war with Iran. It will be a cataclysm if we do it. I can't believe intelligent people would want to do that, because it'll make a terrible situation far worse. I don't know if we'll do it or not. It's terrible, but we definitely are targeting Pakistan. And go ahead. I'm sorry.
Let me make a key distinction again for your listeners, and hopefully this will help. Because when you say that people have these sort of, when you describe people as being criminal, that typically in Western jurisprudence suggests they have a state of mind, an intent, what we call mens rea, the state of mind that connects you to the crime. That's the difference between involuntary manslaughter and premeditated murder. You know, you intended to do something. And that's a very key distinction.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome back to the NewsHour. I'm Steve Lindeman. I'm on with Jeff Gates. Jeff, pick up where you got cut off at. I apologize for that.
Yeah, it's quite right. What I was trying to get your listeners to distinguish between is people who have a criminal intent, a state of mind that connects them to the crime, versus what that would be an agent. You know, you think of 007, he's out there, he knows what he's doing, he's got a mission for the crown, this sort of thing. That's very different from what we call assets. And assets, people who are profiled to have certain needs and whatnot, that those who wage war by way of deception, they profile those needs and service them. So, for example, you'll find that when the 1967 war broke out in Israel, that same night, and a former Irgun terrorist was in the White House, it appears bedding down with our commander-in-chief. Now, what an interesting coincidence. Because we have a whole series of these sorts of compromised situations running throughout presidencies.
Explain what Irgun was. Some listeners may not know.
Irgun was the sort of the most radical and terrorist of the initial Israeli settlers that run by Menachem Begin. They bombed the King David Hotel, numerous sorts of terrorist acts, all of course in the name of the greater good, because you had to establish this Zionist organization over there and give it the status of sovereignty.
Menachem Begin, who later became Israeli prime minister.
That's correct, that same fellow. So in looking through this, and what you'll find in guilt by association is I go back through several presidencies, but we'll do that in more detail in a sequel, and showing how the same group of extremists and elitists had worked their way into the sort of what I call the small part of the funnel of information. You don't need to be the president or the vice president. It suffices to be his chief of staff. That would be Scooter Libby. You don't need to be the Pentagon secretary. It certainly would help to be his deputy. That would be Paul Wolfowitz. You don't need to be the head of the CIA. Just establish your own intelligence-fixing outfit called the Operation for Special Plans, run by Douglas Feith, and generate your own false intelligence. And so then it makes the United States, and this is why I call it guilt by association, we look as though we're guilty of this war because we associate ourselves with this state who has consistently cooked our intelligence and compromised our decision maker. And that's the theme of the book.
Oh, well, we definitely cooked the books to go to war. But again, we've done it every time, Jeff. I guess it's an old theme. And this country isn't the only one that's done it. This is a pretty common practice, I think, other countries under their own aims, whatever they might be, have done the same things. I've quoted Hermann Göring before he took his own life at Nuremberg. He was interviewed by a prison psychologist. The psychologist asked him, how did you ever get the German people to go along with what you wanted to do? And he explained that it's no different in a democracy or a dictatorship. You've got to bring the public around to what you want. So you create a pretext. You create a danger. The Nazis created their own, a false attack across the Polish border to give the Nazis a pretext to invade Poland. They were really Germans dressed up in Polish uniforms. So we created a pretext. In World War II, we forced the Japanese to attack us at Pearl Harbor. That was a hell of a pretext. And they absolutely did attack us. There's no question about that. And to get us into the Iraq and Afghanistan wars, we had 9/11. And it's a big open question as to exactly who was behind this, who were the operatives, not the people who did it, who were the people who ordered it done, who planned it. That's the real question. And there's no dispute at all that we certainly knew that something was coming, and we knew where, and we knew when. And at the very least, Jeff, we just sat back and let it happen, because this was what the project for a new American century, with the Wolfowitzes and the Rumsfelds as members, said, we want to change the world, but it will be slow and deliberate beyond a major act like a new Pearl Harbor, right in their statement. And I've quoted that a number of times. So, wonder of wonders, they got their new Pearl Harbor, the 9/11 attack, and everything that's happened since, as we say, is history. But a lot of it was planned in advance, Jeff, like the Patriot Act, a 300-400-page act that came out 4 weeks after 9/11. Well, this thing was written many months in advance. The Afghan war, Jeff, it happened a month after the 9/11 attack. You don't go to war. You don't plan a war in 4 weeks. That war was planned many months in advance, and we simply needed a pretext to go in and attack Iraq. Of course, the Iraq war was planned many months in advance, but it happened in March 2003. I see more devious things going on behind the scenes than I guess you do.
No, I don't think so. I think that where we differ is in the definition of who the we is that we're referring to. This is certainly not a we the people situation. This is
a
we of those who consider it their right to cook the intelligence in order to deploy our military to the Middle East. And I think if you look to who the beneficiary of that war is, it certainly does not appear to be the United States. It does, and if you look to who would be the beneficiary of us going into Iran, clearly, again, not the United States. So to suggest that it's in our national interest, meaning the national interest of the American people, I think really gives your listeners a very unfortunate perception of who it is that may indeed be the chipmunks in the woodpile here.
No, Jeff,
that's what I'm trying to sort out in this book, Guilt by Association, to really deconstruct this and go through several presidencies and several wars and say, okay, let's go back and see if we can find the common theme here.
We have to take another break, Jeff. I absolutely agree that the American public is never the beneficiary of our government's actions. But let's take a break and we'll come right back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back to the NewsHour. I'm Steve Lindman. I'm on with Jeff Gates. We're talking about his new book, Guilt by Association, How Deception and Self-Deceit Took America to War. Jeff, I absolutely agree that this country has done certainly does not benefit the great majority of the people in it. I also agree that I feel that we went to war to benefit the state, to benefit the corporate interests that we thought would benefit from the Iraq and the Afghan wars. But I agree with you that the way things have turned out, they absolutely have not benefited the elitist interests in the country. We're in two protracted losing wars. We're draining the U.S. Treasury, waging them. This will go on forever. I see no end to this. Eventually there'll be an end, but this could go on for many years. It will drain away trillions of dollars, along with the even greater number of trillions we're giving to criminal bankers on Wall Street. That's a separate discussion. We may disagree on that as well. I've written an awful lot about that, about Iraq as well. We are bankrupting the country. I wonder if you feel that way. We are spending way beyond our means, and it would be impossible for us to run the country if it weren't what a line that I've used once in a while, the kindness of strangers, Jeff, the foreign investors that buy our debt so that we can keep funding these things, along with all of the the money that we're creating today, the Fed and so on and so forth. But this has a bad ending out there somewhere. We are definitely bankrupting ourselves. When it will happen, I have no idea. That can't possibly benefit the country.
Yes, Steve, I have a chapter in there on finance because of my finance background. And sort of to back up for just a moment, you'll find that what is now unfolding is very much within a range of foreseeability if you go through the dynamics of how finance really works. And so the question is, why would we freely choose forces that are now undermining our freedom? Now, what kind of waging of war is that? Whereby we believe, when I was in investment banking, my general manager would come in and say, money's smarter than people. And if you believe that, and there's a certain culture that does believe that, then what you'll do is simply put your money in Wall Street and you'll say, don't worry about what your money does. Just maximize your financial return and trust us. Everything else will turn out just fine. Well, it's not turning out fine, and predictably it did not turn out fine. And that's what I'm trying to get people's minds around. If you're waging war by way of deception, it has to be waged in the shared field of consciousness. That's where a consensus resides. So we have a consensus around the sort of money myopic economic consensus, now called the Washington Consensus, with which we are now branded worldwide. And that consensus was guaranteed to do just what it's doing. It creates oligarchies worldwide. And by concentrating wealth and income, you undermine both democracies and markets. And that's being done in the name of the great democracy, meaning the United States. I can say with great confidence, Steve, this is not us doing this. This is not we, the people, doing this. I think you're correct to say it's being done by elitists and extremists, but I'm not so sure they're elitists and extremists who are loyal to this country.
Well, I feel that their policies are self-destructive. They may keep the game going for an extended time, Jeff, but excesses, no matter what they are, whether we're talking about finance or war or drugs or alcohol, excesses that become too great always have a very bad ending. So right now we have a very severe debt problem in the country, and the solution that's been prescribed is to pile on more debt. Well, to me, that's like prescribing more alcohol for an alcoholic. He may feel better in the short run, but the more he takes and the longer he takes it, the worse off he's going to be and the bigger the hangover and serious problem he's going to have. So if we keep piling on more debt, the stock market may rally the way it has in the past few days. But in the end, we're going to have a bigger problem than we have right now. If we keep these wars going, keep spending these trillions of dollars, and we're not winning them despite the propaganda that says we absolutely are not, that as big a problem as we have today, it's only going to get bigger down the road. So this very definitely is not in the interest of the country or the people who live here, including the most powerful people in the country. But maybe their time will pass, and they'll hand the baton to somebody else, and it'll be their problem to worry about.
Well, this initial book is the first in a series called the Criminal State Series. And this is meant to show the common origins of this sort of belief-based system, this ability to displace facts with what you believe to be true. I believe that there is an infallible wisdom in globalized capital markets. Just simply let them work their will worldwide and everything will turn out fine. Now, what culture, what people would have brought us that belief system? How do we embed that in education so that anybody educated in economics or finance in the United States over the last 50 years embrace that belief? I embraced it. How did that come about? And that's what we're trying to show through this series, is how the criminal state is now embedded in your own mind. You are now part of this phenomenon that we're now saying is the United States doing this. You know, we've embraced this belief system that has turned the United States into what you are saying, this criminal, that the United States is the criminal state. And I'm saying, no, that's not the case. We've embraced a belief system that has made us act in ways that are contrary to our values. How did that happen? And how do we get rid of that? How do we sever whatever ties with those who brought us that belief system so that we don't continue to look guilty by our association with that belief system or with countries who serially take us into wars, as we were taken into Iraq, and as the same network is now trying to take us into Iran?
Jeff, we're well trained, and I'm a graduate of the Wharton School, so I went to what I call a very black-hearted place today. I believed in the system. I came out with an MBA in 1960, and it was a different age back then. I graduated while Eisenhower was still president, but and it was a bit of a different world back at that time. Certainly not as extreme as it is now. Vietnam hadn't begun, but it was starting to percolate a little bit below the surface. I believed in this, but I was also a product most of my working life of small business, and we never carried on the way the big boys do it. That's a story unto itself.
Well, the model, Steve, is very clear. I wrote federal pension law for 7 years. When I got to the Finance Committee, it was $800 billion in the hands of pension fund managers. As of March of last year, it was $17,000 billion. That's a substantial amount of change. That's the primary force, the primary human force on the planet, is that enormous amount of capital allowed to slosh around and do nothing but seek more of itself, money seeking money. And we are branded with that model, and we ourselves have chosen that model. Anyone listening to your program who doesn't care, if they got a 401k plan and they say this guy is offering 5% and this person 4%, I'm going to go with the 5%, you have become part of what I call this criminal state. You have displaced every value except money-denominated values in order to get your own self-interest served. That's the self-deceit portion of this book. So people have to wake up and realize they are part of this criminal state. The question is, how did this happen? How did this get embedded in a shared field of consciousness so the United States is now branded as the Washington Consensus? It says the only value that counts is values that can be denominated in money. Where did that come from? How did that happen? That's what we're deconstructing so people can wake up and see it for themselves and see their own complicity in it and quit blaming it on George Bush's and the Rumsfelds and the Cheneys. That's not the issue.
Well, I blame it on them, but I blame it on us, too, and I absolutely agree with you on that, that the public lets itself be lulled to sleep and to think that we have the best of all possible systems. And too many people in the country believe, maybe less so George Bush now, after 8 years, his approval ratings went to the lowest ever for a U.S. president, past Harry Truman at his lowest during Korea, and Richard Nixon's during the worst part of Watergate. George Bush beat them both. And, of course, the ratings fluctuate depending on the poll. But he'll go down as the least popular president, and I'll have something to say about him very shortly. I'm doing a very lengthy article assessing his 8 years. It may be the longest article I've ever written, and it needs a book or two, but I have to do it in an article. But we're very well trained, and the system is very sophisticated, the public relations, the effective media. But it begins in school, Jeff. I mean, we get it very young, and we're brought up in the history that we're taught. And our parents the same way, and then we get it continually in the major media, where we're never told what's really going on. We're told what those in power want us to think is going on, and the reasons why. And of course, the truth is mirror opposite of what they tell us, which is why people listen to a program like this.
I'm afraid this makes people cynical, and it really emboldens and empowers those who we're trying to identify as the real problem. I think people need to realize that is, you know, that's all very interesting. And I think it really is going to take people off track to what it's going to take to really solve this. The people who we're profiling in these accounts thrive on that sort of cynicism.
Well, we're the product of the information that we're taught, Jeff. We get information, we process it, we can either accept it or reject it. If we only get one stream from the people running the country, from the corporate interests and nothing else, then people will probably believe what they're getting from that source. If they listen to a program like this.
This is a challenge, and I'm very aware of that body of work that says it's just the corporate interest. But keep in mind, the corporation is only an entity. It's like a hammer. It can be used to drive a nail or hit yourself in the head. What drives the corporate entity is money values. That's all it does. It is a vehicle for pursuing financial gain, period, end of sentence. Okay?
Oh, I agree.
So say it's a corporate interest. It's not a corporate interest. This is the same state of mind, the same criminal state. It says displace all values and give a absolute priority to money values. And if a value is not denominated in money, then it simply literally does not count, and it must be displaced. Now, that is not a state of mind that would be freely embraced by Americans. It has been embedded in the education system so that we were induced to freely embrace it. That's the theme of guilt by association. So I think if you go on that track that you're on, you're going to make people so cynical that they're going to disengage, and that's going to disempower what we need, which is people being willing to look behind the curtain and look inside their own consciousness and say, how am I myself responsible for this, rather than putting it off on the corporate interest or whoever happens to be the latest person in the White House.
But it begins with knowing the facts, Jeff. You've got to know the truth. You've got to know the facts. And then you can make your own judgments. And the purpose of my writing, the purpose of this program, is to inform people what the truth is best as I know it, and my guests know it. We're the alternative media. We are the media. We're the real media. We're the place where people can go in programs like this, where they can hear discussions like this, where you and I can express our points of view. We'd never get on CNN to talk like we're talking now, or Fox News. Or if they made a mistake and they brought us on, we'd get sound bites. And I like to have a guest for a whole hour. And an hour isn't enough. I mean, we really need all day to talk about something like this. It's big. It's important. So I agree with you that people have a lot of the blame to share. But we have to inform them. And they need to take the time to get themselves informed. That's where I put the blame. The people who won't take the time to find out what really is going on.
And when you're in a recession, when you're in a situation we're going into, it makes it even more difficult.
Oh, it sure does.
People look to their personal security and crowd out the things that need to be done for national security.
But they should ask themselves, why are we in this mess right now? Why did this happen? It never should have happened. It happened because there were some very, very great criminal acts that brought us to where we are now, but that's a different topic.
Well, no, I don't think it is. I think it's very much the same topic. This is a belief system that was very much promoted by Alan Greenspan and Larry Summers, who's now back on the scene again, and Bob Rubin and Bill Clinton's team, that said, you know, that really we have to have this absolutely free market for financial capital to do what financial capital does best, which is create more of itself. And once you did that and you turned loose the financial creativity, which Greenspan was happy to encourage, then you got these pilings of debt on top of debt on top of debt. And keep in mind, most of that securitized debt was acquired by pension plans. That was the primary market for the securitized debt. I'm real familiar with that, having written a federal law in that area.
Was this a fraud? You're the expert.
Was this a fraud? You bet it was a fraud. But how long ago was this fraud put in place? How long ago were the dynamics of this fraud put in place so that they would play out as they're now playing out? Could it be that sinister? Could it be that? Is this how war is waged in the information age? That's what this series suggests. Yes. How would you expect it to be waged in any other way? You know, are you going to get on CNN? Of course not. Fox can have you on? Of course not. None of these networks are going to have you on. You know, because if you're trying to crowd out the facts with what people can be led to believe is true, it's very important that you target those areas essential to the notion of informed consent, which is the basis of democracy. You go after those domains first. The current Secretary of Defense, who happily is going to be carried over, you may disagree, his name is Robert Gates, and he had a great phrase last October. He said, when you're waging unconventional warfare, the most challenging combatant is what he called the people in between. Between you and the facts was Wolf Blitzer on CNN. Between you and the facts was Judith Miller in the New York Times. You could not get to the facts. This crowd was cooking the intelligence and then using the media to report the cooked intelligence, and any decision maker was living in a echo chamber of total falsehood and deception.
Well,
the question
absolutely.
Is who had the motivation, the means, and the opportunity, and the stable nation-state intelligence to pull that off? It was not the United States.
Jeff, let me throw one fact at you. I knew a year in advance that we were going to war in Iraq, and I knew that Saddam had no weapons of mass destruction. And how did I know? Because the New York Times reported it on their front page day after day around 1995 and 1996. Then they conveniently forgot about it after 2000 because Saddam's son-in-law defected to the West, Hussein Kamel. He was the guy in charge of Iraq's weapons program, including the so-called weapons of mass destruction, which of course was a myth anyway. He had chemical. He might have had some biological. Biological could be a weapon of mass destruction, depending on what it is. Chemical weapon absolutely is not. A nuclear weapon is a weapon of mass destruction. Saddam had none of that. But we knew it. The New York Times reported it pre-Judith Miller. And then it disappeared down the memory hole. So everybody forgot about it. And certainly the people in positions responsible enough to run the country, they knew that. So to say that they didn't do this willfully, I don't think that's right. I think they knew darn well there were no weapons of mass destruction, and they took the country to two wars willfully. The Taliban, Jeff, they were invited to Houston, Texas, shortly before the Afghan war began, before 9/11, to try to make a deal with them to go along with building the pipelines from the Caspian area to a warm water port. And they were willing to go along with it. And they didn't want much in return, but we turned them down. One thing they wanted was to be recognized as the official government of Afghanistan. We turned them down flat. We have to break again. I'm sorry. Welcome back to the NewsHour. Scott Ritter also said it. Jeff, you remember, chief weapons inspector, and he was vilified for saying Iraq had no weapons of mass destruction, or nothing much. But we're getting near the end of the hour. I want to give it to you to finish up. Please go ahead.
Yeah, appreciate it, Steve. I mean, for your readers' perspective, here's what we're trying to get people to understand. This war is being waged in the shared field of consciousness. That's where a consensus resides. By the time the war shows up on the ground with boots on the ground, this crowd that we're profiling is off pre-staging the next war, as in Iran at the current time. When you're waging war in that field, the most powerful weapon you have is the power of association, either to accredit or to discredit, either accredit a person or a country or discredit a country. The United States has now been thoroughly discredited. All that goodwill we created out of the Second World War and whatnot, thoroughly discredited. That enormous economic strength, we had half the productive power in the Second World War. We're now totally indebted and in bankruptcy. How did that happen? How do you wage war in the field of consciousness? You do it by deception. And what this series is meant to do, the Criminal State series, is to show people so they can see it for themselves precisely how that's done and so they can see it in real time.
Jeff, do you have a timetable on your new book?
It's probably going to be looks like it'll be in the spring. The next book will deal primarily with the domination of media and popular culture, as well as organized crimes influence in the White House, dating from Wilson. You'll be happy to hear dating from Wilson up through the latest phenomenon out of Chicago.
Would you do this? Will you alert me when it's coming out, and we'll get you back on air and we'll talk about it?
You bet, of course.
Oh, I'd love to do that. We have a couple of minutes left, but please go on.
What we're hoping with this series is to enable people, again, to see this in real time for themselves, so that when you read your newspaper, when you turn on your TV, it becomes more transparent to you. The undisclosed bias becomes transparent. The undisclosed agenda items become transparent, so that you don't continue to blame your country, your own country, I mean the United States, for these horrendous acts. That is, I think, misplaced. I think this is deception that's been ongoing inside the government for quite a long time. Yes, it is elites, and yes, it is extremists, but they are not people who are loyal to the United States. This traces back to those who consider themselves above the law, those who consider themselves that they have the right to act in their own interest against the common interest. And that's precisely why this country was founded, to get away from people who wanted to govern the country based on belief rather than on confirmed facts and the evidentiary trail. And as an attorney, I mean, you have to go back through and kind of parse back through this, because people are not accustomed to dealing with concepts like an asset, someone like George Bush being perhaps well-intentioned but being sufficiently dysfunctional that this crowd could prey on his dysfunctions. The born-again Christian, the recovering alcoholic, the out of sorts with his father, all these kinds of things are easily profiled in such a fashion that if you indeed have an extreme event, particularly an emotionally wrenching event like 9/11, that you would know within an acceptable range of probabilities how that person would respond. So we're trying to get that, we're getting this down to the mathematics and the sort of the physics of how this sustains itself over generations, because cartels don't hold together, they fall apart. conspiracies don't hold together. Somebody sells a story to the Washington Post. But this phenomenon, Steve, has held together across generations. How is that done? And who is behind it? How do you sustain something like this?
It's very serious. Oh, it's very serious, Jeff. And at some point it has a very bad ending. And very sadly, I don't see much change coming next year under Obama. I view the person who sits in the chair of the president as a front person for whatever the interests of the powerful influences behind him one day are her. Oh, dear, we've come to the end of the hour. It's my saddest moment because I really want to go on, but I'm afraid the hour is up. Jeff, I can only thank you for coming on. And when the new book comes out, we definitely have to go back and talk about it to pick up on this story.
Terrific. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Jeff.